Get ready for a little surf and turf action on Midnight Run Through, a podcast miniseries devoted to celebrating the 1988 contemporary classic action buddy comedy Midnight Run, written by George Gallo and directed by Martin Brest. Co-hosted by me, Jen Johans from Watch With Jen.
And me, Blake Howard from One Hate Minute Productions.
Each week, we'll explore the film we first bonded over when we became friends in 2019 by surfing through the incredible roster of guests from journalists to novelists and beyond who love it as much as we do, digging into Serrano's finances and Alonzo Mosley's FBI files. Come with us on Midnight Run Through as we crisscross the United States with the characters played by Robert De Niro, Charles Grodin, John Ashton, Yaphet Kotto, Dennis Farina, Philip Baker Hall, Joe Pantoliano, and company on screen. Today, our guests are...
I'm Sean Burns. I'm a film critic for WBUR in Boston.
Hey, I'm Rob Belushi, actor, host, producer, but mostly I'm a very good buddy.
Yes, you are.
You are, really. Yeah.
But before we go any further, let's kick things off on Jack Walsh's old turf with the ultimate question.
Why were you so unpopular with the Chicago Police Department?
And maybe one of you actually is. I don't know.
I think one of them, yeah. Actually, I would say very popular, right?
Oh, very popular.
I am popular. I think you're talking about me. And I would say that I was very popular with the Chicago Police. And then my popularity ran out the second I moved back to Los Angeles with absolute catastrophic results, which could only mean one thing, which is jail. You know, so I'm kind of a reverse, you know, De Niro on this one. I'm a reverse Jack Walsh.
Sean, tell us about your love for this movie, because you know, you're a De Niro guy from way back. And
this was my first De Niro movie in the theater.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. I was still at the age where you try to had to like con your parents into going to the R-rated movies with you. So it was some family trip, and like I was like selling my uncles and stuff on it. It's like, you know, when the whole family would go to a movie, I'm like, well, we gotta see this new De Niro movie. It's supposed to be hilarious. And I remember my aunt, well, I really wanted to see Die Hard, but I had already snuck into that the week before with my friend. So I
feel like
them
this
all
movie would be a great family, like a great movie for your uncles.
Oh yeah, well it was funny because everyone loved it, but on the ride home, my uncle Jimmy said, you know, geez, you fucking think they said the word fuck enough in that fucking
I watched this movie last night, and it was all, I turned into a cigarette. I mean, this movie should be called Cigarettes. And I mean, I haven't had a cigarette since October 23rd, 2009. And all I right. smoked a pack last night. I just said, fuck it. I want one of Dorfler's, what's his fucking name? Dorfman? Dorfler.
Dorfler.
Dorfler. I want one of Serrano's nice ones. I want one of Jack Walsh's soft pack. I was just like chewing Nick Red gum until I went out and got a pack of cigarettes. And then I just looked like my mother. Present day.
Yeah, I mean, this and Goodfellas were the really height of the De Niro cigarettes, right? Like... Mm. I mean, I guess the cigarette holder in Casino yeah. kind of counts.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
too fucking John Barrymore for me.
Yeah. Walking around in a pink robe? I've lost control. No, it's the cigarette acting. I don't think I've ever seen anything better than this movie. It was great. And the fact that they smoked everywhere, like Grodin is commenting on the cigarettes. Mm-hmm. And it's hilarious because no one pays him any mind. On the train, in the police station, on the airplane, in the restaurant, in the bathroom. Like, if you're alive, you're smoking in this movie, and I loved it.
Or the ticket counter at the airport.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. What do you think? Yeah. Yeah.
Take a wild fucking guess. Yes.
Yes, that's it. Yes, God. He was great.
Mm-hmm.
He was great. You know, I didn't see this movie until I think the first time I saw it was last year. It was always like a movie saw that
another Jen Johans influence. Just like,
yeah, I got Kate into it and Nikki into it. Donal admitted he hasn't seen it. I don't think Jordan has seen it.
Yeah,
we gotta turn everyone. Yeah,
gotta get on that.
My buddy John Barinholtz, he's like a guy I've been friends with for 20 years, and his favorite movie is Raiders of the Lost Ark, or Raiders of the, maybe I said that wrong. Obviously, it's not my favorite. And so I'm always like, okay, man. And then, so he's been talking about Midnight Run for years. And I'm like, okay, man, I'll fucking see it, you know? And I loved it. And so when you guys invited me to talk about it, I'm like, all right, I'm going to watch this again. It's fucking great De Niro. Great Grode. Everyone's great. On Sean and Jen, on Blake and Chris Candy's podcast we do, we pick like two favorite characters that aren't the lead. Or just two favorite characters. I don't think I could do it in this one. There's like five that are fucking incredible. I mean, Yaphet Kotto is so great. I just enjoyed him so
Alonzo
much.
Alonzo Mosley. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Oh, when Yaphet Kotto died, I went right for this movie. It's like,
yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
The most exquisite deadpan, man.
Yes.
Fuming.
God, he gives that look. He's like a male Medusa. Like, I feel like I would just turn to stone if he looked
like. And it's even funnier because De Niro's Jack Walsh just mean mugs him right back and does these like raised eyebrows, like, oh yeah, you're scary, aren't you? You're so scary. And everyone else is like, what is he doing? This guy's gonna kill him. I love it. I love that.
I could just see like two actors on set, like, I'm not going to lose this scene to you. No, I'm not going to lose this scene to you, you know, like battling. But it was great to see Jack Walsh like turn into a real, you know, smart ass when anytime there was authority around, you know, it was pretty, pretty cool. Pretty cool.
So, Sean, I want to go back because I love the detail of you being, I don't know how old. But like a kid who's like, we've got to go see the new De Niro movie at like 9 or something. Like, I love that. Like a 9-year-old is in it.
Oh, you're 12.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Well, let's say 12. You're 12. You're like, okay, we've got to go see the new De Niro because I've seen the rest, but I need to see this theatrical De Niro. So like when you went and saw it and you saw it with the family, did that just like, did it immediately become like a sort of like home video or like a cable classic for you? Or like how long between drinks was it? Like, do you next remember seeing Midnight Run and it forming part of like the lexicon of these kind of movies?
I know I had the poster in my room. I got it from the video store. So it was that stupid cartoon poster with Grodin like bent over his shoulder.
Yeah.
Because the theatrical was really cool with them running.
Yes.
And then, you know, they would always have like a cool theatrical poster and then this really shitty video box.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's just one of the movie was always on.
Yes.
It was like you didn't even need to buy it. It was just a afternoon cable perennial.
Yeah.
And it was especially funny when it was edited.
Edited for no swears. It's about 15 minutes long.
I was like, whose voice is that? It's coming out of Robert De Niro's mouth.
It's been on a lot lately on cable, unlike the movie channel, you know, circuit. But I had to rent.
I will say, like at that age, thanks to Beverly Hills Cop and this, I thought John Ashton was just like the most famous actor in the world.
Yeah.
Doesn't appear again until Gone Baby Gone.
I get so excited whenever I see him now. It's just like, oh,
he's.
He's in Beverly Hills Cop 4. I was like, I couldn't believe it. I saw the trailer for Beverly Hills Cop 4. I never thought I'd be so excited. I forget Eddie Murphy. I'm like, John Ashton. Yes.
I know. I was like, he looks great. And then you look it up and realize in Beverly Hills Cop, he was like 32. Like, guys just used to look like that.
32 he's... in Beverly Hills
Cop. It was very young, and like if an actor showed up looking like that now at a casting agency, they'd get the door slammed in their face.
See ya, son.
His costume was so great in this movie. Like, the way they dressed him was so, I just loved it. Like,
yeah, he's kind of like outlaw trucker, you know, like he's kind of got this weird thing.
Well, it's funny. Yeah, there's
I had De Niro's jacket for a long time.
And, you did?
What happened to it?
I totally have. I mean, that's the same jacket Matt Dillon had in Drugstore Cowboy. You know, I had to get that jacket.
Oh, everybody wanted that jacket. Yeah.
I love to think about awesome. Sean walking up the street in Boston, turning around with a fake badge and just to no one. Spinning around.
Didn't you tell me you did some of these in like an acting class or something, Sean?
Yeah, in an acting class in college, my roommate was cast as the Duke and I was Jack in a scene, and it was super easy to learn the lines because I already knew it. It was a scene on the bus.
Amazing. But, you know what I noticed last night? I've seen this movie 8 million times, and last night it clicked. I watched it again. They're both named John. I don't know why, you know, John Wesley Walsh and, you know, Jonathan Mardukas. I don't know why that didn't click for me until last night. Yeah.
Big screenwriting rule broken right there.
I know, use the same name. But I love it.
Yeah, so that was the easiest acting class I ever had, was just, you know, make De Niro faces and blow cigarettes in my roommate's face.
Like, and were was, you yeah, well, I was going to say, were you smoking in class? Cuz what a
Well,
dream.
You could do that back then. It was the
90s, of course.
Man.
Of course.
Yeah. There were no rules.
Yeah.
Look at Rob's face. Rob Belushi's face when you talk about how much smoking there is in this movie. I'll tell you what, Rob.
I remember.
I've got a half packet of cigarettes since I stopped smoking about, like, I want to say, like, a year and a half ago, I stopped completely smoking, went on the stupid vapes, got off that. I'm like you, heroically on Nicorette gum. But let me tell you, there is nothing like watching this movie than me going and opening that half packet that I still have and just smelling it for like 5 seconds and going, all right, putting it down.
Yeah. I mean, there is nothing, like, I am an admitted cocaine addict, and there is nothing better in this world than a cigarette. I mean, I know that says a lot about me in general, like the human cockroach, but wow, I was just, and I remember smoking everywhere. I remember flying, being young, and people smoking on the airplane. I remember when I moved back to Chicago after college, like, you could still, you weren't supposed to, but like, no one gave a shit. Everyone just smoked in bars still. And that went away like overnight.
Yeah.
And just to think back to that time is so like crazy to me. It's like walking around people like stabbing you. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Crazy. Crazy.
I remember having in Australia, we would go to like a sports bar, like in Gosford, where I grew up, near where I grew up. We go to a sports bar in the evenings. And I remember both smoking and being inside, because you're allowed to smoke inside, so much that when I went home, I would sometimes shower at like 3 a.m. and wash my hair and my beard because it smelt of a pack of cigarettes. And I didn't want to go to bed because all I could smell was cigarettes. So I would just like go and have a quick shower. And one time my housemate like opened the bathroom door while I'm in the shower. I was like, why the fuck are you showering at 2:30 in the morning and waking up the house? I'm like, oh dude, my hair smells. I'm sorry. Sorry. Sorry about that. Gotta do it.
Yeah, no, there's this club near me. It's a private club, so they can do whatever they want. And they smoke in there. And it's like in this basement and there's no ventilation. And I never go there. It's always the place everyone goes after all the bars close, because they can stay open till like 3 a.m. Everyone in there is smoking. And I was like, you know, 10 years ago, I would have loved this place. And now I can't wait to get out of here.
Yeah.
Like, this stinks. I used to smell like this all the time. I'd go home and like wake up in the morning and just like, you'd be hungover and like, oh my God, what is this smell? I can't get it off me. I took like a Silkwood shower and just make a hangover like 50 times worse.
I dated a smoker, and I have asthma, and so the rule was he couldn't smoke around me, and so, like, he would be good all night, and then as soon as he dropped me off, he told me he was a musician. He's like, I got in the car, I fucking chain-smoked the entire way home. I think think he was pretty glad when that ended. When they let him, gave him his walking papers, like, you're free, you can smoke. Yes.
Go smoke and be free, bro.
Yes, exactly.
I love you, babe, but I need my Marlboro lights.
Yeah. You don't have to date the asthmatic anymore. Yes.
Well, he lost.
Uh-oh. He did.
Just off Jen's point of they're both named John, like, and you were saying, like, they're so smart. I'm new to the movie and kind of a neophyte in terms of, you know, film knowledge, but it occurs to me, like, how they're both, you know, they're both smart in different ways and also lacking tools in different ways. Like, Mardukas, his story is, you know, I woke up and I realized I was in a criminal enterprise and I tried to do this good thing in it, you know, but he bumbled his way into something awful and didn't have the tools to escape. And his life is on the line. And the same thing, and it turns out to be the same guy, obviously, Serrano, and Jack kind of, with the right thing in mind, bumbles into this criminal enterprise, doesn't have the tools to escape, and both of their lives are wrecked, you know, and they have this experience which has kind of ruined Jack and kind of made Mardukas this fucking, I don't know, Zen Swami about everything, you know, pretty much. But you know, they balance each other well, and it's nice that they share this trait, you know, they share this, like, different sided intelligence and survival instinct. So it's cool.
Yeah,
he's Grodin's so great. I mean, that look at the end with by the telephone is like, Jesus. Yes. Christ. It's like half paternal, half a third paternal, a third friend, a third just lover. Love. You know?
Yeah.
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 He was wonderful.
I find it's one of those movies. It's not even like any, like, I mean, there's great lines, but it's more what you're laughing at. Just the characters are so totally themselves.
Yeah.
That it wears so well on repeat viewings that you just laugh because you feel, you know, these guys so well that you're laughing at their faces and the reactions to each other. Like, just being around them is inherently funny.
It is. Like, watching Grodin's interactions. Like, last night I was watching the scene where, you know, the card is canceled and he's like, ma'am, I paid my bill. And then Grodin is looking at the woman and just, like, shaking his head, like, no. Like, yeah. It, like, you know, I've already run it. No. And like, can you believe this guy? And it's just this little interplay. He doesn't say any. It's fabulous. Yes.
What's the guy in his office?
Jerry. That's Kehoe, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, the donuts guy?
Yeah, the donuts guy. Yes.
You, like, go get donuts.
That guy.
Giving strong Ben Mendelsohn energy.
I know, that big time. It's like that guy is a real guy. Like, just a real useless shit who's kind of been hired by this, like, dirtbag to just answer a phone, is very pliable to money. You know that he's kind of, you know, Muscone's probably been betrayed by him before, and he's kind of like, yeah, it's all good. But just that whole interplay, he's such a real guy with, like, a real life, and you see him, he's like a barfly that you've seen 100 times. You know, you just look at him and you're like, oh, he's got some stories. And he's just there. I also love the, now I can't help but watch all the other characters in the scenes rather than the focal characters, because I love them all so much. But now I'm, like, just, like, looking in the nooks and crannies of this movie, just going, like, what's his story? Why does he work so well? Why is he there? And why does it work? And just everything in this movie, it works to perfection. And I think Jen and I
both. Like, is
the
FBI agent who became Angela's dad on My So-Called Life.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. And he's everywhere. I mean, that guy's, he's all over TV and film. But
I know, and every time I see him, it's like, Angela's dad!
Yeah. The guy, the older white-haired guy who looks a little bit like the actor who plays Max Fisher's dad in Rushmore, at the very end, he's like one of the crew of hitters that Serrano brings in. And He has no lines, but then like when everyone gets arrested, like he says nothing and he's just kind of there. And then when everyone's getting arrested, he's just like looking frozen. Like not, it was the funniest thing to me. Like just, he would have been CGI'd out. I love him.
George Lucas with a laser pointer. He's out. See you later.
Yeah. Just like the most energy and the most drama of the entire film. And, you know, it's like a big moment and he's just like staring off somewhere else. I loved him. God damn it. Sweetheart. Yeah, but
Rob, please, please talk to us before you get back to Dorfler. Please, as a Chicagoan, tell us about one Dennis Farina.
You know, my dad was over the other day and he was talking about Farina for a blue streak. We were just kind of like doing a Farina love fest. And he just had all these, I think he talked to you about Heat, right?
Yeah.
Did he talk about
Farina? He talked to me about Thief. Yeah, he talked about Thief and talked about Farina.
I mean, Thief. Yeah, yeah. Jesus. How can I get there? I saw Scott Kahn on the street yesterday and I was almost like, dude, he, like, I wish my career turned out like yours, but you know, it was like a cool Nepo baby moment. And I just like, we just had our sandwiches. I'm like, I'm not going to fucking bother this guy. I'd probably punch my teeth down my throat, but no, in Thief. Yeah.
But
he was just talking about like Farina and how he started. He was like, he was the cop that worked where Steppenwolf worked and they brought him in for a reading and then a play. And that's kind of how he started acting with those guys. And Michael Mann took him on. And that guy, John, I mentioned, his uncle was this guy, Bernie, who was a Chicago cop forever, and his partner was Farina. And this, he's gone now, Bernie passed, but when he was alive, he would tell us like stories, but he had this really interesting octave voice. And he talked like this, you know, he's a Chicago cop, but he talked like this. Are you talking about Farina? You know, like, tell us all these stories that like, I can't repeat, but but the first movie I ever did is awful. Farina's son Joe was in it, and I was like, "Buddy, incredible to meet you! Like your dad is one of my all time favorite actors, and like Chicago spirit animals. You know, yeah. I mean, you should be on. It's like Michael Jordan." Dennis Farina, John Root, or some you know architect from the World's Fair, you know, and he was telling me this story. I don't know if I've told it on a podcast before, Jen, maybe, but he was just telling me. He told me one story about his dad. He's like, yeah, you know, my dad. He sounded like too, like, you know, my dad would come pick me up, and we'd be driving, and you know, he'd be going to soccer or something, and he'd be like. We'd be, you know, in a bad part of town and he'd pull over and he'd be like, hold on, stay in the car. I got to go get this guy. And I'd see my dad just walk into this like, you know, run down apartment building and come out with a guy in handcuffs. And he'd put him in the back of our family car and we'd stop at the precinct. And
that's
the idea
amazing.
Of like, he wouldn't see like from the front door in and out, but like what happened in those moments to me is violent, corrupt, law ceases to exist at the front of that apartment. And I just in my mind, Farina's like kicking down this door and like you know, like Vincent Hanna when he's getting fucking Henry Rollins, you know, like hitting him and jumping through a screen door and dragging him out. But everyone liked Farina, they know, you know. He's fucking awesome, man. He's awesome. I love him. Yeah, I mean, look, it's so great to see him in a villain role, you know?
Yeah.
And he has that really scary moment, too, mm-hmm. in the limo.
Yeah.
Because he's such a Chicago fuck. You know what I mean? Like, it's you don't really get to, you see him pissed off, but like not scary. And then he finally brings that, like, that
I'm
scariness.
Kill your wife. Yeah.
The weight of it. Yeah, exactly. The weight of the power and the trappedness of Walsh and all that. And the where he's trying to bait him at the airport about, like, is your
yeah,
wife's fucking
another
a cop now.
Yeah.
So he, it was like a wonderful moment that he got to take him out of like this idea of a gangster at the, you know, old Vegas, whatever, into like this living, breathing evil.
Yeah.
That Walsh
and Kingsley and Sexy Beast all of a sudden.
So I'm finally in the presence of greatness, huh? The Duke. The guy that steals money from the scum of the earth and gives it to the unfortunates of the world. I wanted to meet you face to face. Did you actually think that you were going to steal my money and get away with it? I stopped by here to tell you two things. Number one is that you're going to die tonight. Number two, I'm going to go home, have a nice hot meal. I'm going to find your wife, and I'm going to kill her too.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well,
and I thought he
really
action
comedies
up.
Don't have that moment, you know, they're like Rush
yeah.
Hour or something. It's really only the Martin Brest ones, because I remember like Beverly Hills Cop would get really like, Beverly Hills Cop is really fucking violent.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
like
yeah.
you get shot in the head right at the beginning, you're like, oh, this is a real movie. Wait.
Yeah.
We'll be back after this quick break.
Well, I love that about this movie too. I was tweeting with Jen last night, like, that scene with the ex-wife,
yes,
and the daughter,
the babysitting money.
Oh, God damn it! And like him not being able to say anything to his daughter was,
yes. Are you in the eighth grade?
And then she,
are you in the eighth grade? It's the best.
Yes.
God, and she comes out with the babysitting money. He can't accept it. It's like fucking heartbreaking, and you see this whole guy's life,
yep,
in this 5-minute sequence, you know, of like why his watch has stopped, why time is not moving on for him, why he's trapped, why getting out is so important, and why he gives it all up, you know, at the end is,
yeah,
like major. You're right, Sean. It's a beautiful, beautiful movie with real human stakes, and fucking De Niro and Grodin, like, you can put them in a hijinks all across America, and like, it means something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It meant something to me.
The
yeah.
one thing I don't like is he gets all the money at the end. I mean, that was what every 80s
yeah.
movie, you know, Marty McFly had to get the big truck. Like in the 80s movie, you had to get the big thing of cash. But it would have been much better if he just, like, you know, fuck you, hung up and let him go.
Yeah, I can see that.
Well,
the only thing that I loved about it was that fucking the Duke was lying his ass
yeah,
off.
Yeah, no,
the
that's the
whole
bit that I like. That's the bit that I think
he
that
says
I
he
love.
Has money, though, repeatedly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but that's the whole thing. I've got money. He's like, yeah, you've got money. I love that.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, you've got money. Sure. Fucking, you
yeah.
know, like going and stealing money from the bar with the litmus configuration and all that sort
yeah,
of stuff.
Yeah.
But that's why I like it, Sean, is just because he's like, I've got money. Like, oh, I've got money on me. And it's $100,000.
Yes.
Ish. It's in the ballpark.
300.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, $300,000. And you're like, he's got millions on his body then. He's got millions
yeah.
stashed away.
What's
then?
All this fucking bullshit about Lyonnaise potatoes that you can't afford?
Yeah.
Like, you had 300 grand in your pocket. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, Lyonnaise potatoes, that does sound pretty good with a cheeseburger. Like, I'm like, as hungry as he is, and he's fucking lying the whole time, you know? That's the only reason I liked it. But
it is funny to
yeah.
think about those tropes, though. Now, because we're so detached about like the tropes that maybe they fell into or whatever the case may be. But it's like, I think that's why Midnight Run stands up, because it's like, it kind of defies those after a while. Like when you take it out of its time. It's probably why it's aged really well, because it's like, we're not seeing every second movie that has that now. You just like stumble upon it these days and you're like, wow, this is just great. Like everything looks great. They're in real places. Yeah. Helicopters explode and people, they do a bit where they fly a biplane and De Niro drags Charles Grodin out of a flight, out of a plane that's probably being dragged behind a car, and drags him out. And it's like, you know, no other comedies are doing that these days on that scale. You know, it's really crazy.
Yeah, it's I thought the action was a little rinky dink, but then, you know, it was the summer Die Hard came out. So
yes. Yeah. Yeah. And Die Hard was worried. Jen and I have learned in this process that Die Hard was worried about Midnight Run coming out. They were like, oh, a big De Niro action movie directed by Marty Brest. It's like, oh, that's going to eat our lunch. Little did it know that.
Yeah, is the guy from Moonlighting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Little did they know.
Yeah.
It was the movie that was going to change it all.
Yeah, Die Hard opened the same day as the Deadpool.
Oh my God.
About the symbolic passing of the torch there from one kind of action movie to the other.
Yeah. The feature debut of Jim Carrey.
And some very good clips of Jim Carrey doing his Clint Eastwood, talking about working on that movie with him as well. Go seek them out, listeners. Very fun.
Also the film debut of Slash.
Wait, so that was before Peggy Sue got married with Jim Carrey? Wow.
Oh, maybe you're right. I don't know.
Yeah, I think Peggy Sue got married was before.
Maybe this just like day. Just before. Maybe they were shot. I don't know.
I'm revealed as Lyonnaise potatoes.
No. I
young
wouldn't
Jim
known, but I just
a young Jim Carrey.
Rewatched that.
Love it.
So, like, the thing De Niro's greatest at, phone acting. There's my second favorite Instagram account behind Sydney Sweeney's, is the De Niro on the phone Instagram account, which is just pictures of Bobby on the phone. This is one of the top De Niro on the phone movies, I think. There's so many scenes.
Yes. Yeah. I love it when he's like, you know, kill, and then he makes his face like, no, I'm not going to kill you. Yeah.
I'm going to shoot him in the head. I'm going to leave him in the ditch. And then he looks at him and goes, just does this big like.
No.
I love that. I laugh so hard. What a sweetie.
So what is it that he does on the phone that makes him so much better at being on the phone than every other actor in the world? Like, I'm trying to figure it out because
he really calls those people. No, I'm just
kidding. I feel like he's actually someone's talking to him.
Yeah.
I know. You ever heard, like, James Woods told that story on the AFI tribute to Scorsese, that like they actually called James Woods when they were making Casino and he was at his brother's video store. Yeah. And it was for a scene where Woods didn't even have any dialogue, but De Niro insisted that Woods be on the phone.
Yeah, that's got to be it. He's like, I got to call Farina up. Or wait, no, I got to call Joe Pants.
I feel like so many of them that he has to have someone on the phone to play off. And also the thing that he does that a million years ago, I worked, like while I was at university, I worked in a call center, like a contact center where, you know, people ring up for, you know, inquiries about applications for stuff or whatever. And you'd be on the phone doing customer service. And there is a moment where someone's really pissed off about something that you can hear them performing down the phone. And De Niro does this great thing that I observe is like, he's having a normal conversation where it's not a performance, like where he's not performing to the person on the other end, but then his brain ticks in when he needs to perform and he starts theatrically performing down the phone. And I feel like people really do that. Like that's a touch where you're like, oh yeah, motherfucker. Like they like wind themselves up and it becomes a performance and the audience is of one. It's the receiver of the phone. And he does a great job of like figuring out when it's just like, I'm just saying three words and then see you later, versus like I'm performing down mm-hmm. the phone. And so many opportunities is like, oh, hello, whoever's listening, you're sitting in that van, you stink of BO, you know, stale coffee.
Yeah.
And like, there's and so those moments he picks it up, he gets mm-hmm. he gets really amped up. And then like the next scene he bounces off. But I think that that might be part of it because like, you know, we're all heat heads here, like best phone acting down the phone to Van Zandt. I mean, it must be on that Instagram account, Sean, of like, you know, what am I doing? I'm talking to an empty fucking telephone. You know, like that.
That's the profile pic.
Yeah. Like that, I think that's what it is. Is he figuring out that sometimes phone calls are performances and sometimes they're not.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Yeah.
Because they used to always tell us when we were in that call center, was like, even if the person is a complete twat on the other end of the line and you're like, this fucking guy, and you really want to rip into them, they say force a smile because they can hear the smile in your voice. You're like, okay, yep, not a problem. And so you'd sometimes sit there with this dumb forced smile because it makes you sound like you're happy. And De Niro gets that. Like he plays with like smiling on the phone and this, and then he flips it. And yeah, I think maybe that's part of it. He's so terrific.
Now, Blake, what were you selling at the call center?
I was taking applications. I was actually working for a bank at the time. Where like you would call up if you were applying for a credit card.
And I worked at a call center for
asking if you like your application was approved.
Yep.
And
like we did similar shit.
Similar. Yep. Yeah. And then go like, no, it's not approved. Or it is. Oh yeah, congratulations, it's approved. Oh, look, unfortunately. And then, yeah, I could say all the things, but then I would reveal where it is. And so I'm not going to do that, but that's, you know, off it. But, yeah, I still remember those, all the scripts, the scripting of all those calls. Cause I have said them so many times. It's like doing the same show thousands and thousands of times, just doing it over and over.
Oh, we know where you got your mic skills now.
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
My podcast hosting skills from many calls. Many calls.
You're a podcasting lord. I mean, you are
virtuoso,
incredibly prolific, dude.
He's a pod genius,
dude. You too, Jen. I mean, you got like hundreds of thousands of. Chelsea was like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "Oh, I gotta watch this movie for a podcast." She's like, "Again?" I'm like, I mean, I only do like six a year. And then I thought about you guys and I'm like, this dude is cranking pod. Like, wow. Like, it's pod machine, you know? I mean, but I do
it's,
feel
it's
like.
Cranking pod is such a
cranking pod. That's going to stick.
That's going to stick.
I do feel like De Niro, like, you know, some people kind of like talk on the phone and like, you know, he's always like staring down the barrel of the receiver, you know, like yeah. aiming the intensity into that fucking hole, you know what I mean? Like, forcing you to understand whatever important thing he's saying. It's pretty great.
I think also Italian mothers since having, all ethnic mums since having like your iPhone. I love watching, like, it's a super annoying thing, like hearing someone talk on speakerphone on the train. But when you hear an old ethnic mum on speakerphone, cause she's like clinically deaf for being on the phone for too many years of her life, is like screaming down the phone, like in like their native tongue, and then like holding it up to listen and then doing this on the train. It's one of my favorite things. It's like my favorite people watching moment. I'll pause whatever I'm doing and I'm like, okay, what's she going on about here? Let's watch her do her De Niro down the phone, you know, for that intensity.
What a great and curious quality you have, Blake. Because I was just thinking about, like, what a wonderful way to interact with the world. Like, no wonder people like being around you. I would view that as the greatest imposition to my day.
Oh, it's
I would seethe with rage. I'd be like,
what the fuck is going on about
fucking baby boomers? You took it all, and now you're taking the silence too? Fuck you.
Well, no, it would be tough if I could go back in time and kill baby Hitler or kill whoever took the fucking headphone jacks out of the phones.
Yes, yes.
Because now whenever I'm on the subway, I have to listen to every Jagoff's episode of The Big Bang Theory or whatever the fuck they're watching. Listen to their stupid conversations. Bring back the headphone jacks.
Yeah.
I don't buy anything without earbuds. Headphone jacks. I need the headphone jacks big time.
I hear you.
Yeah.
I hear you.
And I like the wires. I'm old school. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't. Yeah. The Bluetooth is a punish. But no, so if it's a normal boomer, Rob, I will say that'll piss me off. But when it's an ethnic mom, because of my like half ethnic background, it just maybe takes me back to like my nana's kitchen. And she'd just be on the phone speaking in half Maltese, ripping into something. And the only way you knew she was really pissed off is how many fuckins like were intermingled with the Maltese broken English. And then you're like, so it just feels like I just stop for a second and I go, oh, I'm back home in my nana's kitchen, man. It's nice.
The Maltese fucking feels like home.
Yeah, it does. It really does.
Maltese fucking. I thought of my grandmother. Maltese fall. It's the stuff dreams are made of. Yeah.
It's really the stuff that dreams are made of.
Yes.
I thought of my grandmother last night when Kodo took Serrano cigarettes and like looked at them like, oh, I'm going to smoke these and enjoy them because my grandmother smoked Benson and Hedges for so long. And it was so great because I would steal them from her. It's such a ridiculous cigarette for like a 14-year-old to be smoking. And she also, you see this like this rage gibbet in my head. My grandmother had that too, but her answer to that was not, you know, Botox wasn't really the rage. I love this woman. We lost her a couple years ago. Anyway, she wore a piece of thick surgical tape across her to prevent it from getting worse. And I was just like, Graham, you're walking around. We're at the fucking mall, lady. Like, a piece of tape between your eyes, you know? And but she, you know, she had the best legs in Chicago. You know, she's a stately lady. So maybe they weren't looking at her face.
There you go.
But I didn't know that you were Maltese, Blake. I'm just learning that now.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I love it. I love it. We have a friend of mine and I have like a meme share and it's all like, it's all boomer, you know, like boomer shit. And it's pretty funny. I won't go into it. For those of you listening who were in their prime when this movie came out and might be, you know, taking these things personally, you guys are cool.
If you like Midnight Run, you're in the club.
You're in the club.
Yeah, you probably won't. You'll leave us with a little social security. You know, you wouldn't. You'll duke it for us. You'll leave us a little.
Oh, they're all dead from smoking.
Color of Money has got some good smoking too. Yeah. You know?
Paul Newman, great smoker. Great smoker.
God, he's great. Fuck.
Yeah.
I was watching Nice Guys and good smoking, decent smoking. And like as phenomenal as what's his name? Gosling is. And his smoking's pretty good. But it's better than someone who's like, oh, that person's never smoked a cigarette in their life. You know what I mean? I was watching Monsieur Spade and like he did great smoking, but like it's just a certain age. People, you know, it's not.
No, all young actors now, like, they can't smoke cigarettes. They can't smoke it. It's really embarrassing.
Listen, I'm not an actor, but if you need me to, you want to pay me to smoke, I will smoke on your set. I'm just telling you, call all casting agents. If you need someone to smoke, I will be there. You better believe it.
It is.
As long as I can buy my kids a present for smoking, then I'm happy. You know what I'm saying? Like,
it's one of the worst things in modern film. Yeah, it's like, you're right, Sean. None of these kids smoked. And like, they don't smoke. I'm like, why are you smoking now? You can't do it. You so obviously cannot fucking do it that it takes me out. And I'm like, oh, she's not a Irish double agent from, you know, working for the Algerian offshoot. She's a fucking actress, you know? And it's like, it's gone. The dream is broken, as Jordan Harper might say, you know, that the magic is gone. And like Gosling.
But Clive Owen in Monsieur Spade smokes up a fucking storm. He has never been better. Children of Men and this, he's never been better. He's as good as it gets.
Great. He's great. I mean, what a fun place to, you know, Midnight Run is fun too in that way. Like you're in the world, you're in the grime of America. Like you're through, there is nothing fun. I mean, even Vegas, which is so funny. I lived in Vegas and we kept seeing the frontier. A month after I moved to Las Vegas, they imploded the frontier. That was like my big welcome to Vegas experience. And we just watched it explode. It was crazy. And then it's weird, but you're in this world of like, everyone is desperate, you know, in the small towns, in the desert, in the cities, everyone is desperate. And it's just a really nice like world to live in, but you feel trapped. And Mr. Spade is great too. I mean, I don't care as much about any kind of story anymore. I just want to live in the world. And like Mr. Spade was like wonderful acting, great world. And the story, I was like, you know, this is, the fuck is this? But, you know, I'll watch him smoke and be a stone cold bitch to everybody in France. You know what I mean? Like, this is great. This is great.
Well, I was talking about this with someone over the weekend. We're saying, do you remember anything about the story of Mare of Easttown? All I remember is her being awesome and like that world, that community, and how vivid that was. And I couldn't tell you who killed who. I don't even know who the bad guy was. But 100%. You remember the personalities in the world.
That's right. That's right. I love the movie. It's so fun. And, you know, like what Sean was saying about action comedies is just, it's so fun, but it's also like meaningful. And everyone's, even though they're like comedic characters, they all are just believable as people, you know, especially in the grimy cities that they live in. And, I just find it all. I find it to be an incredibly pleasurable watch, to watch Grodin and De Niro work together, and live in that world. So I thank you for giving me an excuse to watch it again.
Yeah, I mean it's so easy to watch. I think that's why it was on TV. You know, it's probably on TV right now. Fall into it.
I mean, it's
and it looks like it was easy to make. It looks like they all had fun, but I bet it was really hard because no one else has done it since. Like Martin Brest certainly hasn't made a movie like this since.
This has been Midnight Run Through with Blake Howard and Jen Johans. We'll be back next week with another episode, but until then...
See you in the next life. See you in the next life.